Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to your week 7 repack. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm here with Evan Tex Western. Save us with the people, Tex.
Hey, folks. Another win. It's a good day.
24-10. We were just talking before. This very much feels like kind of that Steelers game, right? Where it's the team was kind of on autopilot. They won against a team that is not of their caliber. So I guess that's a good sign. But like Aaron Rodgers put it in the post-game presser, like the coach's favorite thing is, you know, you have things to work on, but you still come out with a win.
Yeah, and it was by no means perfect, but you started to see some life from the defense. I know we'll talk about the red zone defense in a little bit, but that was exciting. Honestly, the passing game looked good as long as Rodgers wasn't getting hit, especially in the second half. I don't think there were any sacks after halftime. So yeah, we'll take it. Move to 6-1 heading into that really tough stretch of the schedule. So that works for me.
One of the toughest things about this game, so first and foremost, Washington outgained Green Bay. If you're wondering why this game was so weird, Green Bay really came together in the red zone. Like you mentioned, I think what they had 4 drives in there, no touchdowns, only 3 points. That was nice to see. I saw they had the little clip, the stat clip, you know, in the broadcast, and it said it's the first time since like 2003 that any NFL team has allowed every red zone possession to turn into a touchdown over the first, you know, 6 weeks of the season. So it's nice to get that monkey off the back a little bit, I guess. But at the end of the day, I mean, 195 rushing yards, a lot of those were Heineke, but his longest was 38. So it's not like they had one breakaway rush. It's just, I talked about it in Intercepted with Mark Bullock, but like my big worry, right, was you don't need to outplay Green Bay defensively. You just need to get one sack, and then that kind of like derails everything. And then once they get the ball, it's hard for this Packers defense to kind of get off the field. Like they only gave up 10 points, but again, a lot of that came from red zone efficiency, I guess you would say, because they had 430 yards offensively, almost 200 yards rushing. Like you could see that those guys were getting gassed too. I mean, you look at the defensive line. That entire second half, you could tell the wheels were kind of falling off a little bit. They were lucky to have that lead early so that they could keep them in kind of a passing script, I would say, because Heineke got 10 carries, which is just crazy. The only other guy who had more than 4 was Antonio Gibson, who's dealing with that shin injury.
Yeah, it was really crazy with those series in the second half where Washington goes on an 11-play, 86-yard drive, gets stopped at the goal line. Then 7 plays, 56 yards, stopped at the 3. 13 plays, they get picked off in the end zone. And then that last drive was a 10-play drive. So they had the ball for a huge amount of time in the second half. And again, they were moving the ball consistently, but the Packers finally found that old cliche bend but don't break defense and were able to get those big stops in the red zone that maintained that 2-possession lead pretty much the whole second half.
Yeah, and I just want to – they mentioned it in the post game too. They gave Rashawn Gary the game ball, and I thought he was deserving. If that wasn't his best game as a pro, it was pretty close up there. They even had a – so he got the 2 sacks, but there were also times where, like, they would run sprint or something like that, and Rashawn Gary would hold the edge and would basically force an incompletion because he didn't let the guy outside of him. That's been an issue for him. I would say probably his biggest issue playing on the edge is being able to play contain and making sure nothing gets outside of him. So the fact that he stepped up there seemed good. You know, Rodgers talked about him as like a guy who has kind of turned production into leadership opportunity is what it kind of sounded like. Like he called him and Campbell both out for that. Should also be noted. So Preston Smith didn't play. King didn't play. I would guess both of them play next week. Just the way that they talked about Preston Smith, I mean, LaFleur said that he was selfless for not wanting to play this week, which kind of sounds like he could have gone, but it probably cost him, especially at that age with that type of injury that kind of lingers, you know, going into a week where you're going to have a quick turnaround and play Thursday night football. So I would expect probably both of them to suit up next week.
Yeah, for sure. And Rasul Douglas getting another start. Well, actually getting, I guess, his first start in place of King, right, since Yadam got the start last week. But for the most part, I mean, Douglas played well. Washington had a pretty decent game out of Terry McLaurin, but he was really their only substantial passing receiving threat in this game. So, yeah, I thought Douglas played pretty well. I think I saw LaFleur complimenting him on his performance. And yeah, Gary was just a monster today. That sack strip right at the beginning of the second half was, that felt like almost like a game clincher to me, the way that game was going. Just because it let the Packers go down, get a real quick touchdown drive to start off that second half and take a 21-7 lead. So that was a huge play to you know, take away any possible momentum that Washington was going to have coming out of the half.
One thing I want to talk about, Heinicke, the Lambo leap. So I got that was offensive. That should not be allowed to happen. I don't know who was in that front row in the Packers jersey who was like hugging on him for jumping in. That's absurd. Throw a beer on that guy's head. Dump a beer on his head. What are we talking about?
I don't care if he grew up a Packers fan and was a big Brett Favre fan or whatever. No, that guy is not wearing green and gold. Get him out of the stands. That is unacceptable. Come on, guys.
I've seen one. I don't want to be pro taunting in this, right? I don't want to come across as pro taunting, but we've seen way less offensive stuff be called as taunting. That was not, I jumped into the crowd of an enemy of an enemy stadium, you know?
Yeah. There was another, I can't remember which game, there was a bad taunting penalty earlier today too, but yeah, it was, oh man, that always chaps you a little bit when you see opposing teams do it. I mean, I think there was a Vikings player who tried to do it a couple of years ago, and rightfully so, he got thrown right back out. But the fact that, yeah, that Heinicke was able to sit there for a couple seconds and soak it up, I think the only thing that makes it a little bit better is the fact that that play got called back because he went down into kind of the quarterback slide and was short of the goal line, which led to the first red zone stop of the year for the defense. So I kind of alluded to it last week. We needed an offense to trip all over itself to get a red zone stop, and that was the first one because he slides, gets called down just short of the goal line, and then they call that quarterback sneak, and Devondre Campbell punches the ball out and gets Heinicke called down. So again, Campbell, another great game for him, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But yeah, it felt like a little bit of karmic justice for Heinicke getting that touchdown called back after trying to leap.
Yeah, it's just it's avoid the Lambo leaps, avoid the belts.
Yeah,
this never works out for you guys. You are not chosen. You are not chosen. You are not an exception to this rule. So Merciless actually played. It looked like they tried to get him in on pressure packages. It seemed kind of like, again, they're very different players. I don't want to pretend that he's Khalil Mack, but it seemed like it was like the week one Khalil Mack plan. I remember, you know, Packers fans are probably aware of that because they got Khalil Mack week one the year that, you know, that trade went through. But it really is like, okay, you're going to be a pass rusher for 1 week, and we can get that under your feet. And then from there on out, you know, you can start contributing. I wouldn't be surprised if Preston, right, if he's on a pitch count on Thursday, how involved is Merciless going to be? Cause I thought he brought more pass rushing potential, I guess you would say, than, you know, Garvin did, than Hamilton did at this point in the season. So why couldn't he be the third outside linebacker? You know,
I completely agree. And it would not be surprising to me, given how well Preston has played against the run this year, if he's more of a first and second down guy, and then you bring Merciless on as a sub package rusher on pack downs. I could see that being sort of the rotation that they go with to try to keep Preston as fresh as possible.
And we only saw it really a little bit when Za'Darius was healthy, because obviously he was kind of limited to third downs too in week one. But I think there's potential to get all three of them on the field. You know, they've done it a little bit too. And it seems like kind of the way that they would rather do it is use Gary as the drop down guy over center. So like kind of playing him in like the Za'Darius role. And I don't think that's a bad idea. I mean, if you have a guy who can just, his job is I'm running through your face, and, you know, Preston can set an edge, and Merciless is done it for a decade now. Why wouldn't you want to, if you're going to bash in a pocket from any direction, why not bash it in directly in front of the quarterback? Right.
And absolutely, get him
rolling left or right. So,
yep. Yeah, that's a great way for the Packers to get some interior penetration and collapse the pocket from the inside. Put him next to Kenny Clark and let those two guys just do their thing and bull rush.
Yeah. Do we want to go into vibe? I guess let's go to vibe checks early. I mean, there wasn't that much to talk about the game. So let's throw it to break and we'll get into vibe checks.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, and we're back. Offensive vibe checks. I'm gonna start out this week. I think this felt a lot like the Steelers game, where it's just they're kind of coasting. They did a little bit of different stuff. Like you can talk about like what they did with two back and kind of how they got Tonyan involved a little bit more this week. But vibes, I would say like 7 out of 10. Like there was nothing crazy outside of the cross the body throw from Aaron Rodgers where he looked like he was going to pull it. He said that he thought about running it, and then he took two steps and was like, nah, I don't have the legs for this. I got to keep my eyes downfield. And then he found Devontae across his body and ended up scoring a touchdown. That was a fun play.
Yeah, I'm right with you at a 7. There were some pass protection issues in the first half. I think 3 sacks before halftime. And some of that is just credit to Washington's defensive line being really damn good. Right. So, but we saw as long as they were keeping Rodgers clean, this passing game was clicking, and it was a diverse passing game too. I mean, Adams only had 7 targets. Lazard had that tremendous drive where he caught 5 balls right before the end of the second quarter, including that touchdown. And you even got a little bit of Robert Tonyan in the mix too. So the biggest concern again for me was not really any semblance of a running game, and I was a little confused why they used so much empty personnel early on in the game, especially against a front that you know is going to be able to get pressure with just 4 rushers. That seemed like a weird game plan thing to me to roll out so many empty formations rather than trying to keep an extra guy in to help Chip or something. So a little bit of schematic stuff, but 7. Yeah, that's right. We're right where I'm at too. Yeah.
I just don't know. That game plan was kind of weird. There's benefits and negatives to both things, right? If you spread them out, then the ball can get out of your hand quicker, right? But if you get tight, they get heavier, and that's the strength of their team. So there's kind of benefits and negatives to both. I thought it was interesting kind of how they got Tonyan involved. I was going to write something about tight ends, and then it was like Friday, and I was like, I don't want to do a breakdown on tight ends that releases on a Friday. Maybe I'll do it early this week. But the big thing to know about tight ends, Tonyan, when he's in the slot, they're passing, period. That's what they do, whether it's in the gun or out of empty. I mean, they don't really run out of empty anyway. So they're not using Rodgers as like a draw guy or a quarterback power guy. So that's not the problem. But one other thing is they have huge tendencies on who is on the ball at tight end. So for example, Mercedes, if he's on the ball, it's probably a run. If he's in the backfield, what they do is they run him across the formation. And it's a lot of like play action shots where he's like the extra guy to Aaron Rodgers, right, or whichever way he's rolling out, right? And then the opposite is true for Tonyan. When he's on the ball, they're trying to get to him vertical, right? So you get that extra step or two on the ball, and, he just benefits you downfield. The opposite is true when he's off the ball. So when he's off the ball, he's being used as a guy who climbs up to the linebacker level, and it's just I guess the way to think about it is he's not dealing with a defensive end 5 inches away from him. Right. You're using his legs to then get him into a position to block. One of the interesting things was last week against Chicago, they learned our guys aren't good enough to run the ball when we play like this. So what they have to do is they have to use DeGuara as a guy off the ball who would then block. So that's kind of like one thing that they were missing, right? Where you have Tanyan, who when he's off the ball runs to linebacker level. You have Lewis, who when he's off the ball is basically used as a play action threat because he's actually kind of a guy that you want on the ball because his legs kind of limit him. DeGuara is their like move tight end, and you're seeing them run counter, you're seeing them run power. He's going across the formation when he's lined up in the backfield. That's kind of what they're doing. And I think they're kind of forced to play in a three tight end system and rotate those guys with the way that their skill set is, right? I talked to Robert Mays before the Bears preview, and kind of what he was saying was like, one thing coaches talk about all the time is Green Bay, they just double up on so many body types at wide receiver that it doesn't matter who's out there. They can throw a screen to Devontae from whichever three wide receivers are out there on the field at any given time, because there's redundancy there in terms of size. At tight end, we're seeing the opposite of redundancy. Every single one of those guys is just hyper-focused into like a couple things that they do specifically well. And then you're seeing Lewis, every time he does catch a ball, every time he's targeted, he's catching a ball for 10 yards, right? Because he's just an afterthought of how those tight ends are used. So that was really interesting. And one way that they actually got Tanyan active in the passing game is they started using Nub and minus splits, which think of him as like the furthest outside guy, but still in line or basically in like a slot formation, right? So like the touchdown that he caught was a minus split where he's a yard outside of the offensive tackle. He's basically in a tight end position anyway. He's just standing up instead of being in a three-point stance. You get a corner route, guy has inside leverage, it's wide open, right? So they're definitely getting him more involved, and it seems like the way that the offense is talking about themselves in the post-game pressers and stuff seems like they very much want to get Lazard and Tanyan more involved, you know, down the stretch so that they can just stop getting Devontae, you know, doubled or clouded or whatever you want to call it, rotated safeties. It's not – when people talk about double coverage, it's not like actual double coverage. We have two guys on you. It's usually that they're – rotating the coverage his way where he's kind of bracketed, if that makes any sense. So
yeah, and to that point, I mean, just again, the fact that they were able to spread the ball around so much was, I think, a good sign moving forward. Getting all of those guys 5, 6, 7 targets, that's just gonna, you know, like you said, continue to open up, I think, coverages for everybody moving forward. And it'll be exciting once MVS gets back too. Hopefully he can come back in the next week or two. They have that deep threat back, and that, you know, that kind of changes how defenses have to play their coverages as well.
Let's talk about, actually I want to get into this first. They started using two back stuff a lot more. Pony, goodness gracious. Pony personnel. That is hard to say. Basically what they did, they would go into under center and use Jones as a motion man with Dylan still in the backfield, which we saw a little bit when like Irvin got hurt last season. And then they did some split back gun stuff, which is just, you know, a running back on each side when you're lined up in shotgun. So that's interesting to see, because that means, you know, obviously they want it for down the stretch. I don't think it's a, hey, we're pulling this out against Washington because we need this to beat Washington's front. I think it was more like, let's just make sure we have this straight for that health stretch that is coming up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And you saw, I think I noticed a couple different combinations too. I think there was at least one or two plays where it was Kylan Hill in the backfield and Jones in motion, as well as obviously the Jones-Dylan combo. So it does seem like Hill is starting to get a little bit more running the offense. I mean, a couple snaps here and there. I think he ended up with 3 carries today. A couple of those were real late in the game when they're trying to run some clock down. But I still think that there's some opportunities to get him involved a little more in the offense. It just didn't seem like they really had much of a chance to really get into the running game today. Maybe that was by design, again, with all the empty stuff early. But you know, they did, you know, they tried a little bit maybe in the middle of that game to start getting those running backs going, but there really wasn't much running room in this game anyway for those guys. I think the longest run was Rodgers, like 15-yard scramble, and then they had a really nice end around on the jet sweep to EQ, which was nice. I still believe in EQ, but it was a pretty quiet game for the running backs for the most part.
I do think that it's interesting and probably worth noting that the past 2 weeks they've gone against very strong defensive fronts, not necessarily defensive linemen, right? Because like a 3-4 team and a 4-3 team, would you call those pass rushers as whatever. But when they're getting stopped at the line of scrimmage, they do go into the gap power stuff. Like they go into power, they go into counter to get this set up. And that's, those are DeGuara formations, right? We've seen it enough now where that's the DeGuara game. It'll be interesting to see, you know, when Daphne comes back, how they kind of split those tight end reps.
That's the one place where they do have redundancy in body types and skill sets, right? Is with DeGuara and Daphne. Because Daphne was getting most of those reps in the first games.
Yeah, and that they're both guys that they also use down in the red zone too. You know, that's kind of where you see Green Bay's not how heavy they are, but like the fact that everyone can block. Everyone who can catch a ball can block, right?
Yeah.
That's where you see it is near the goal line. Billy Turner, you know, he's gotten Pro Bowl hype last 2 weeks from Aaron Rodgers. He had a little bit of a tougher game today. I mean, I don't really even know what to say other than, you know, Washington's front's very good, but I just still don't buy the Pro Bowl thing. That's a little too rich for my blood.
There's so many good tackles, especially in the NFC. It's going to be really tough for a right tackle with a little less name recognition than a lot of these other guys to really get pumped up for that. So I'm not buying it just yet. I think we can maybe make a push for Devondre or Bohorquez, but Billy's a bit of a stretch to me too.
Last thing offensively, I want to touch Devontae. Just pay him.
Yep.
Everyone knows we can't get anything else done until you pay Devontae and then you convert his like year one stuff into a signing bonus. So that's how you create cap space. Devontae is like, if you want to, I don't know if I was fully bought into like Devontae wide receiver one until this year, but now it's really hard to point at someone in the league and say he's doing it better other than, I guess, Jamar Chase. I mean, he just went for 200 yards. So like Jamar Chase has been nuts. A great year, but
yeah, that catch up the sideline that he made right in front of the Packers sideline, just insane. And I think he got 3 feet down before he got out of bounds with that. And it was tremendous coverage. Just the hands that he has and the chemistry that he's got with Rodgers is just completely irreplaceable.
Yeah. Defensively, I'm going to do the same thing. So like what I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 vibes. One thing that I still have questions about is, so the red zone defense did better. Here's the problem. There are different areas of the field in the red zone, right? So there's like high red zone, low red zone. Really what I'm most worried about is what Green Bay looks like within 3 yards of the end line, right? Mm-hmm. Or 3 yards of the end zone. And we didn't see that many reps. A lot of those red zone starts, it wasn't like the guy that the red zone drive didn't start at the 5 yard, right? It started at the 20 and then it ended at the 3. So I kind of want to see them like in like goal line stand mode more, because that's when coverages get weird. Like red zone coverages get so weird once you get to the line of scrimmage that you're not calling those plays anywhere else on the field. And I still don't think we have clarity there, and they didn't get that many reps. So I understand red zone defense got a big old thumbs up from everyone today. I would still like a little bit more clarity once they're like real tight to the end zone, like within 5 yards, within 10 yards, more so than that, like 15 to 20 yard area, because that's where we're seeing blown coverages where guys, the coaching staff talks about, you know, we need 11 guys on the same page. That's where you see like just DBs look at each other after the play and they're like, what, who was supposed to have that? And you see the confusion. So I don't know if we really got clarity there.
Yeah. You got a couple of opportunities. Those first two stands, again, the first one was, you know, Heinicke sliding short of the goal line. And then the quarterback sneak that Campbell punched out.
And Gary had his paw on Heinicke's back, pulling his jersey back too. Yep. He had a good game, even in the run game. Yep. Like it seemed like Gary, they left him unblocked on the edge, which like happens. That happens all the time on zone. So you're either going to hold that guy with like a boot threat, or you can do the slice stuff where the tight end is moving across the formation like Green Bay does with DeGuara, or you can just full-blown option it. There's only so many ways that you can hold that backline guy. The game changer is when that guy is fast enough that he can actually run down the back of a play.
Yep.
And Gary did that a couple of times today, and that was great to see.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I think that the second stop too, you finally got a little bit of good coverage in close to the goal line, but that one also was led by a mistake by Washington, because Terry McLaurin dropped a ball that basically hit him right in the face mask on third down, leading to Amos making, you know, a pretty nice play on Ricky Seals-Jones on fourth down. So I do think that to some extent you have to take into account the opponent and consider the fact that, you know, yeah, Washington made some mistakes that led to those stops, and, you know, at least take that into account. The pick by Chandon was great. That was again a little more of a high red zone play, so not an example of kind of the goal line defense as you were discussing. So still feels good to at least get, like you said, get that monkey off their back, and, you know, hopefully carry a little bit of momentum into a real tough matchup with Arizona.
Campbell, 2 forced fumbles, 13 tackles. We can get this guy a Pro Bowl vote.
Oh, yeah.
We can get him in. If we rally the troops, we can do this. Circle the wagons.
Well, as of what, last week, he was the top rated inside linebacker in all of football by Pro Football Focus. Like, mm-hmm. It never ceases to amaze me this year that they got him off the street the first week of June for peanuts, basically. He said something in his presser today too that I thought was kind of interesting, just where he's kind of allowed to be the guy, and maybe that's a Joe Barry thing. I mean, he's Barry's defense. I remember a lot of the talk this offseason was about how the Barry kind of Brandon Staley defense really helps shine a light on linebackers in particular, off-ball linebackers. And so I wonder if there's something about this scheme that just really plays well to his skill set, because he looks like a different player than he did, you know, even when he was a solid, decent player in Atlanta. This looks like a totally different guy. And it's just exciting to, you know, to watch him flying all around the field and, punching balls out, and 13 tackles today. Again, just another huge game from him. So let's fire up the wagon, man.
I think one thing that really helps him, and I think kind of helps inside linebackers in general, if they're not like blitz heavy guys, like you're actually like making run reads and stuff like that, is when they're playing the bare front or they're playing the penny stuff, which is like the three defensive tackle nickel, where you're just clogging up those inside lanes. And that Mike linebacker is really reading, like he's reading the guard, he's reading the backfield. If there's, you know, a fullback, he's following that fullback. And it's a lot more like read and react from off tackle to off tackle, left to right, than it is like, okay, I feel a gap, right? Like I see run, I feel a gap. And LaFleur even talked about it, like when he was with the Falcons, and he was saying, you know, we kind of had him as like a run and chase will, you know, for Atlanta. And the way he talks about kind of his role in Green Bay, it's almost like Madden users, right? Like if you're playing linebacker in Madden and you're like, no, I'm just going to use this guy to like cover the entire middle of the field. That's kind of how this defense is constructed, with so many bodies on the interior. A lot of the runs that you're going to get aren't right up the middle. You're not going to get inside zone when three defensive tackles are there, because that's 3 1-on-1s and the linebacker can just run upfield and get into the backfield. So what you're going to have to do is pull a guy or run outside, and he's already in that position where guards aren't getting to him because there's three defensive tackles in front of him. So as long as he can run sideline to sideline and he trusts his eyes, I think it's a really good fit. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit if we talk about this, but it'll be interesting to see if they could bring him back next year, because mm-hmm. I think he's up there in age. Linebackers aren't really a position that you get paid at once you escalate in age, because I think we mentioned this before, like they wear out just as fast as running backs. I don't think people realize that. Like Bobby Wagner right now, you can watch the Seahawks. He's not the same guy that he used to be even like 2 years ago. When their legs are gone, their legs are gone. So it'll be interesting to see like what the market for him is, because if they can get him back on like a Mercedes Lewis type of deal, like goodness, sign me up now. For multiple years. Like this dude is great. One of my buddies was texting me and he's like, you got to stop with the Devondre Campbell best Packers linebacker in like a decade
thing. Nope.
Just a full-blown good linebacker. It's not even on like the the grading scale of Packers linebackers anymore. This dude is
just objectively solid, really NFL good linebacker.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm happy about him. I can't wait. The one thing I will say is, like, if he goes down, I don't know if anyone else on this team
can kind
of play the way that he plays.
We haven't seen Chris Barnes. I don't remember seeing him on defense really at all in this game. I think he maybe made a play on special teams, but the snap counts will be really interesting to see what they did at that other linebacker spot. We saw a little bit of Jalen Smith. I thought I saw maybe a handful of snaps out of Oren Burks, but man, Barnes has really seemingly fallen down the depth chart with Smith's addition, and as Burks is getting more playing time.
I think one thing that hurts him too is he's the one inside linebacker that can't drop down to the line of scrimmage, really.
Yeah.
Like, they use him to blitz a little bit from the interior, but I mean, you could watch Jalen Smith and a couple of his plays, you're like, no, you're playing 3-4 outside linebacker right now. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing with Burks. I mean, they're kind of different guys. Like, Burks is more just like straight line speed, really, like closing speed. The way they talk about Jalen's kind of interesting, because Gary was talking about him and he's like, yeah, dude, Jalen is like helping me like rep to rep. He's like, this is what the offensive tackle is giving me, like, be on the look for that. And then Rashawn is nice. Is saying like, yeah, that's exactly what he gave to me. So like, I just beat his ass. So I didn't expect Jalen Smith not looking so good on the field, but also being like coach on the field. Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that narrative.
Yeah. I think the one other thing I want to touch on the defense was forced four fumbles in this game. Packers only recovered the one, which was the sack strip by Gary.
Fumble luck, right?
But yeah, I think that'll start balancing out. Yeah. Well, and Savage should have had that one down in the red zone too, that he kind of fell on top of and then rolled over, and Chase really got the recovery instead. But yeah, that's one of those things that I think will, you know, it tends to regress as well. So if they can keep punching the ball out, man, that's the turnovers have been there these last couple of weeks for this defense. And I'm hoping that just continues.
Savage has had the year of like, oh, so close.
Yeah.
that's tough. He's a good player, but it's just not showing up in the box score.
There was a pick that I think he could have had that went off his hands. He almost had a great tackle for loss and like a swing pass at one point, and I think to McLaurin that ended up, he missed the tackle and it went for like 30 yards. Just the little plays and the margins that if he can, you know, dial those in, he could be a Pro Bowl caliber player, but it seems like every once in a while, those are just a little bit off, and they can lead to big plays or just missed opportunities.
Special teams vibes. I'm pretty mad. I'm giving it 3 out of 10. What the hell are we doing here? How do we get we got a block? Oh my goodness. That wasn't good. Like, the field goal unit, there's nothing you could do to convince me that the field goal unit, like, it's going to be the playoffs. Mason Crosby can hit every kick from here on out through Christmas. And the first field goal in the playoffs, I'm still just going to be like my heart just beating like 150 BPM.
So it looked like something was weird on his kick there. I mean, it was a short kick, so you'd think he'd be going for, you know, a good high trajectory to make sure that there was no possibility of going straight into alignment, but it looked low and it looked like it came off awkwardly off his foot. Am I nervous about it? Yes. Am I panicked about it? Not unless it happens again. And outside of that, I think the special teams, other than that black field goal, I thought the special teams were great. Slayton had a blocked field goal on Washington's first attempt. Bohorquez has another couple of great punts. That one that he planted like 2 inches off the goal line, that the refs had to get together and decide whether or not it actually was a touchback or not. And then good kickoff return coverage all game long for once. I mean, that was nice. So everything else was I thought was really solid today on the special teams. But yeah, I that block. The more I'm thinking about it, the more concerned I find it.
It's because you forget about it. It happened so early in the game.
Yeah,
and you're like,
yeah,
it didn't matter. And then you're like, wait, we're gonna play a playoff team where field goals matter. Yeah, it's Slayton getting that block is nice. I mean, he's a guy who he has a lot of athleticism, and that usually shows up on, you know, field goal block unit, especially if you have length. I do think that this team is still hurt a little bit by the fact that they carry so few interior linemen when they play them so much. And then Slayton defensively isn't getting that many snaps, frankly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they got some good return on Kiki and Lowry today. Both of them had pretty big plays. Lowry seems like he's been picking it up the past, like, I don't know, 3 weeks or so. But it would just be nice if, like, they just need one more body on the defensive line. Like, I think one more body on the defensive line just to so much as eat reps so that the other guys have legs down the stretch go so far. Because if they lose an interior defensive lineman right now, they basically have three guys that would be like full-time starters and not come off the field. That's just too hard to do when guys are playing that big. Like, no one uses the Packers are using defensive linemen more than probably anyone else in the league right now with the way that they're playing base so much and the way that they play their nickel specifically. To not adjust your roster based off of that, especially your game day roster, I think is a mistake. And I just hope it doesn't bite him in the ass down the stretch, because I could see a situation where it's just like Lowry or Clark, their legs just get burned down the stretch. And then you're like, we can't do a damn thing inside. I mean, like I said, Washington went for 200 yards basically on the ground today. Chicago was playing the same type of game script. We've seen every team come out and say, we are running the ball and we are keeping your defense on the field. And that's how we're going to try to slow down Aaron Rodgers. So you can have 300 yards, but you're only going to get 25 points, right? Or something like that. So I just don't know, man.
We had kind of talked about the trade deadline looming last week after the Bears game, and thinking that if the Packers make an addition, it's got to be in the front seven. Well, they got their kind pass of rusher. Pass rusher. Yeah, they got the pass rusher in Merciless this week. So that worked out. So yeah, I think if there's a move to be made on this team, it's at interior defensive line. That's where they've got to find another body who's at least, to your point, capable of eating up maybe, you know, 18, 20 snaps a game just to keep some of these other guys a little fresh. So we'll see. But that's where, if I'm Goody, I'm making some phone calls.
Yeah, because – so I'm looking at the depth chart right now. So let's say Kenny goes down. Let's not put bad juju out there. But let's say Kenny goes down, right? So you got Lancaster, Lowry, Kiki basically playing full-time up front. Yep. They got Slayton, who pretty clearly is a developmental player who has a high upside, but at this point is not a down player, to the point where they're very hesitant to even get him in the defensive line rotation, right? Yep. So that's your guy off the bench. And then Heflin, who just basically is a healthy scratch every game. So there's not that much on this roster. And then on the practice squad, they only have one guy. It's RJ McIntosh, and he was picked up in season to be put on the practice squad. So I don't know, man. Like, that's a position that they could definitely use depth. I would say that. And then if they could find a tight end who – so I would say defensive line is number one priority. Second, I would say, honestly, is as long as Jair isn't going to be out for the year with a shoulder surgery, then I think the next move is probably a tight end who is every down, because that's kind of what they're missing. They're missing an every down tight end. They know how to use Lewis. They know how to use Tanyan. They knew how to use DeGuar. They put them in good situations, which is nice to see. It's good that Mercedes Lewis isn't running a post on like the play action shots, right? It's good that Robert Tanyan isn't the inline tight end blocking power and down blocking like a defensive end or anything. That's good to see, but the fact that they don't have an every down tight end does limit them a little bit.
Yep. Makes sense to me.
Goodness gracious. All right. I think we're out of here unless you got something else, Tex.
You did want to mention Lucas Patrick's weird helmet.
Oh, yes. The oddest helmet I've seen.
Yeah, that I don't think I've ever seen that model before. And I think our colleague John Meerdink is a little bit of a helmet geek, so I'll have to ping him and pick his brain a little bit about, see if he knows what model that is. But it's one of the more bizarre helmet configurations I've ever seen. And they've been getting weird lately, but that one takes the cake.
It's like it has a fin on the front of it. It's like it has a growth on top of the helmet. It looks like a normal helmet, and there's just like that bump on the forehead. It looks like someone hit him like with a hammer or something. He's just got a big old lump. I don't get it.
I don't know. Weird. But I guess with talking about helmets, one other point to make is I loved the alternate uniforms today. I loved them. I thought the all green was a nice look. And they looked better, I think, in game action than they even did in some of the promotional materials and the social media pictures and stuff that they'd been putting up. So good on the team for coming up with a good green based alternate jersey. And I do hope that they keep this one around for a while.
Yeah. You always worry about alternate jerseys, right? Because we've seen kind of what I think a lot of the Nike alternate jerseys, since they've come into the league and kind of had control over that stuff, a lot of them are just like, just seems like you're trying to be loud for the sake of being loud. You know what I mean? Yep. With those. So it's nice to see them like actually figure out something, especially with their color scheme. I mean, you already have white, and then yellow isn't a color that you can wear on a jersey. Like, it's just too bright. And then you already have green. So what else are you going to do? It's not like the Packers are going to come out in all black uniforms, and it's not like they can come out in yellow. So there's only so much you can do with their color scheme. It's nice to see, I guess it's just nice to see Nike not mess it up. So, yep,
indeed. Agreed.
All right, Tex.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.